Welcome to the Air Force Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
Welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. Earlier this week, members of the Air Force and the aerospace community gathered at National Harbor, Maryland for this year's Air, Space, and Cyber Conference hosted by the Air Force Association. Among the speakers was Air Force Chief of Staff General David Goldfein. In his remarks, he explains what the state of the branch looked like when he first took over in 2016. The mission needs of the Air Force had clearly changed, that was obvious. However, finding out exactly what was needed to help wasn't so clear. Goldfein explains how Air Force leadership went about identifying those deficiencies.
So 4 years ago, I walked out on the stage and I walked us through three primary areas of focus, and it was all oriented towards one target that we all have been aiming on. And we have been relentless about driving forward towards this target the entire time: joint warfighting excellence. How do we ensure that we provide what the nation needs, that we arm the Secretary of State and our diplomats to go into every negotiation to negotiate a better peace from a position of strength? Because at the end of the day, that's the purpose of military power. We don't necessarily want to fight, but we know that the best preparation and the best deterrence is to ensure that we have the military capable to win if called upon. So let's talk a little bit about this journey that we've been on over the last 4 years, and most importantly, let's talk about what we've learned along the way. So we started this journey focused on fixing our fighting formation, our fundamental fighting formation, which in the United States Air Force is a squadron. And I will tell you, I think we hit a nerve on this one. And we started this conversation on a foundation of trust, that the chief and I absolutely, completely, without hesitation or reservation, trust our command teams to get after the mission and get after taking care of people. And because we trust them, it allows us to push decision authority back down where it belongs. And this is more than just you know, doing it because it's the right thing to do. This is actually a joint warfighting imperative. Because I can't expect a squadron commander to be making decisions, taking risk forward when I deploy that individual to Estonia or Poland or somewhere in the Far East if I'm not demanding the same thing at home. And so we have successfully over time pushed decision authority down based on this foundation of trust. And because we trust commanders to know what to get after in their squadrons, how to build readiness, how to build resiliency, we're also pushing resources down where it counts. Because when I was a squadron commander, I was given room to run. And I knew what my squadron needed. And I knew what the obstacles were and the irritants were. And so we're pushing money directly. We pushed $70 million directly into the accounts of squadron commanders and wing commanders and gave them room to run to spend those resources on the innovative ideas that we know our young airmen are coming up with every single day. So hopefully what's resonating when we hit this nerve is that we're putting our money where our mouth is. And we talk about trust and confidence. It's more than just names and labels. We're actually taking action. And when I go out and the chief and I go out to bases, I love asking two questions to every airman I meet. The first question is, what brought you in? What's your story? And I love hearing the story of patriotism, of I just wanted to get out of this little small hometown of mine. You know, I was in college and I just there's all the stories that we know of why folks join and crossed over into Big Blue. And then the second question is, I'm talking through with them on, you know, what their squadron is, where they are, where they're working. I ask them the question, so hey, tell me, what does it mean to be a bulldog? Or a tiger? Or a cougar? Or whatever other carnivorous animal is your mascot? Now I want you to note that I didn't ask, what do you do in your squadron? And I didn't ask, what do you do it with? in your squadron. This is not about whether you and your squadron strap on a keyboard, a ground control station, a missile launch facility, a cockpit, you name it, right? Because what I've found is that the culture and the morale of the squadron is not based on what that squadron straps on. I'm asking them the question, what does it mean to be a bulldog? And what I'm hoping to hear from that airman is, you know, sir, I'm part of something really special, a high-powered team. And the airmen to my right and to my left are the most incredible people on the planet. And the reason I joined actually plays out. The value proposition of why I joined the Air Force, actually, I feel valued in my organization, and I'm led by an inspirational, courageous, and caring leader. That's, of course, what we all want to hear. And we want to hear that the culture of that organization in the Bulldogs is a culture where the right thing is easy and the wrong thing is just really hard. Because this is part of who we are as airmen. 6 weeks after a squadron commander takes the flag of that organization, you can hack the clock. That squadron will have the culture of that command team. It's the nature of who we are. And that command team consists of a commander, a senior NCO, and a volunteer lead spouse. And what we need to do as an organization is make sure that the org chart of the United States Air Force continues to evolve so that the chief and I and the secretary at the bottom and squadron commanders at the top and the rest of us all exist to make sure they have what they need to get the job done. We have got to keep the throttles on up on this. And I would say of all the things that we started, focused on joint warfighting excellence, selecting and developing inspirational, courageous, and caring commanders and command teams is perhaps the most important journey that we've begun, and we have got to keep the throttles parked at full military power. Joint leader development, what have we learned? Well, we learned that joint leader development actually begins with talent management. And so I sent a team out to survey the force, 35,000 interviews, looked at every base, came back, squinted with our ears, listened to the force, and what we came back and understood was that a common understanding of our Air Force, of what we value as an institution, what incentives we put in place, and then how we compete, the officer corps and the NCO corps, against those values was a bit murky. And so therefore, trust and confidence in our officer corps and to a certain extent our enlisted corps actually were farther ahead because of the work of Chief Wright. But in our officer corps, we determined that we have to overhaul our talent management system. And our objective is to find the sweet spot between art and science. Science is the machine of personnel management. It's the Air Force Personnel Center, it's the boards, it's the OPRs, the PRFs, it's the assignment system that we have in place, right? And you actually have to have a machine to be able to do what we need to do in an organization as large as we are. But you also have to have art. And art is commanders and their civilian equivalents, identifying the talent in their organization and being able to influence the development of that officer against what we value as an institution so that we are promoting our best and our brightest to do the nation's business in the service that has the most diverse portfolio. I mean, we do leaflets to nukes. And we operate from 100 feet below the surface to the outer reaches of space. And we're involved in every military mission, either in a supporting or a supported role. And so how do we develop the talent we need for the future? And so as we began this discussion, there was also some folks who were pretty passionate about that. They started doing some writing. And one of them was Colonel Jason Lamb, And Jason was writing some articles on our talent management system, and you may know him as Ned Stark. So Ned laid out some really thoughtful pieces on, hey, how do we do this business of talent management? And if we get this right, this conversation will begin with what we value as an institution. And everything we do will be mapped to that. Let me tell you what we value. In the officer corps, and I think this also applies to our NCO corps, we value, number one, how well do you accomplish the mission that you have been assigned? Number two, how well do you lead the airmen entrusted to your care? Number three, how well do you manage the resources required to do your mission? And number four, how well have you individually improved your unit during the rating period? That's it. Those are the four core competencies that is going to drive everything we do in officer talent management. And those four core competencies ride on a foundation of impeccable character. It's absolutely appropriate for the American people to expect you and I to be men and women of impeccable character. We, along with our Navy teammates, are responsible for the most destructive weaponry on the planet. It's appropriate for them to hold us to higher standards. And for leaders and developing leaders, of all the things that we do as airmen, working on this journey of impeccable character is perhaps the most important that we ever do. So we're about to come to closure on our summer discussion. We have the wing commanders, 280 strong, who are all going to be here on Thursday. We're going to get the final feedback from the discussions they've been leading, because you don't lead an overhaul of a talent management system from the top down. Commanders have got to own it at every level. So we're coming to closure on the discussion. We'll make our modifications, then I will make a recommendation to the Secretary at the end of this month.
That's General David Goldfein, Air Force Chief of Staff, speaking at this year's Air, Space, and Cyber Conference. When we come back, Goldfein gets more into the process the branch underwent in ensuring the wishes of leadership became a reality. I'm Eric White.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
We're listening to remarks from General David Goldfein, Air Force Chief of Staff, speaking at this year's Air, Space, and Cyber Conference.
Why is this so important? You know, as senior leaders, we only actually leave one real legacy that's lasting. And that's those who we raise to replace us, and the investment we make in them. So we gotta get this right. And what have we learned on multi-domain operations? And the C2, the critical command and control that we require to get after it. So as a brand new chief, my first year, I hosted my first Corona when we got together with all the 3 and 4 stars. And I looked out at the table and I looked and I said, okay, who is my integrator? Who is the one at the table who actually can take and look across leaflets to nukes, across the entire portfolio of all the missions that we perform? Who is the one who can actually integrate and design and build a blueprint for a future force that we need to be able to fight and win in 2030? And it didn't take me long to realize, as I looked around, it was me. The way we were organized, I was the first level of complete total force, one Air Force integration. And I will tell you, that's never going to work. Because by the time it got to me, it was pretty much already baked. And so it became clear to me that we were organized to perpetuate, not innovate. And so therein lies why we did some pretty, and I'm not a big fan of organizational changes to fix things, because you got to first start with a problem statement. So we worked our way through the CONOPS first, and we reorganized the staff. We pulled the A5 and the A8 apart, and we stood up an organization called the Air Force Warfighting Integration Center. And they became the lead for integrating and designing the blueprint of a future Air Force. And we put some of our most incredibly talented folks in it, starting with Lieutenant General Tim Fay as the A5, Major General Mike Fantini as the head of AFWIC. And if you haven't met him, I'm not sure he's here, but Brigadier General Q Hynote, who is the EF Hutton, for those of you who are old enough to know who that is, of our Air Force. I mean, when he talks, everybody listens. And they got after design. And their first task was to answer a question from Congress, which is, what is the Air Force we need to be able to effectively execute the missions of the National Defense Strategy to moderate risk? It was a good question. And they, along with Kevin Williams and the A9 team, got after it. 2,000 iterations, looking at every force element, everything back and forth, and that's where we came up and delivered to Congress that the Air Force is too small for what the nation is asking us to do, and we need to grow to 386 operational squadrons. More important than the number, though, was the new dialogue we were having. Because for the first time in years, we went to Congress and started a discussion on the Air Force we need, not just the Air Force we can afford. Every committee chair and every defense committee included this in their opening statement. The president committed to this in his address to the cadets at the Air Force Academy. And we're on track now to getting this written into law in the 20 NDAA. We had our own version of night court. And we ran it a little bit like a nuclear certification. And we wire brushed every program in the United States Air Force. And we graded that against the National Defense Strategy. And as a result, you're going to see some of the largest movement of resources as we deliver 21 in probably the last 2 to 3 decades on building the Air Force we need to do multi-domain operations.
General David Goldfein is Chief of Staff for the Air Force, speaking at the 2019 Air, Space, and Cyber Conference earlier this week. He discusses where the Air Force is heading in our next segment after one more break. I'm Eric White.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
So after all this hard work, what does the future of the Air Force look like? That's a question Air Force Chief of Staff General David Goldfein was pleased to answer while speaking at this year's Air, Space, and Cyber Conference earlier this week.
So now let's talk about where we're headed. In 2018, the first year in many that we actually received full funding, and our thanks to Congress and the staffers that are here for that, we were able to successfully stop the bleeding because we had been in a downward spiral for years. In that same year, in 18, two key products were produced, the National Defense Strategy and the Nuclear Posture Review. The last version of the new National Defense Strategy I saw as chief was version 67. Such is the nature of the inclusive way that Secretary Mattis brought on that signature document. In 19, we actually, this year, have begun our recovery with a second year of full funding. And in 19, this last year, we took on two really important debates. The first was to shift from a platform-centric approach to battle management to a network-centric approach to advanced battle management. This, ladies and gentlemen, was much bigger than joint stars. This is about the future of joint warfighting in a networked digital age. And we began our transition in space to a defendable architecture as we canceled SBIRS 7 and 8 and moved to the next generation of infrared satellite technology. And in 20, the budget that is currently coming to closure is actually the first budget that has complete national defense strategy alignment, because it produced in 18, and you always plan 2 years out. So the 20 budget that's on the Hill now has complete and total alignment with the national defense strategy. This is going to be as hard for us culturally as it is technically to shift from a platform-centric orientation that we all grew up with to a network-centric orientation. Let me just try a little thought experiment to make my point. Let's bring up today's Air Force. So I stand here today as 21st Chief and tell you that this is one hell of an Air Force. And it's why I can stand here with confidence and tell you if we go to war, we're going to win.
You've been listening to General David Goldfein, Air Force Chief of Staff, speaking at the 2019 Air, Space, and Cyber Conference from the Air Force Association. If you missed any of this or previous episodes, you can find all of them online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to the Air Force Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
The 19th Annual March of Dimes, Heroines of Washington Gala, presented by Perspecta, honors women who exemplify leadership and are making a difference in our community. From CEOs to rising stars, this year's finalists will be recognized for their significant volunteer contributions at a Black Tie Awards presentation Tuesday, November 19th at the Ritz-Carlton Tyson's Corner. All proceeds from Heroines of Washington benefit March of Dimes to help lead the fight for the health of all moms and babies. Since 2001, the event has given awards to 118 heroines and has raised more than $3.1 million to support the March of Dimes efforts to help every baby have a brighter future. To learn more about March of Dimes, to purchase tickets to Heroines of Washington, or to make a donation, visit marchofdimes.org/heroines. That's marchofdimes.org/heroines. Celebrate these inspiring women who go above and beyond to improve our community.
Hey, animal lovers, this is Foodie and the Beast, David and Nikki Nellis. Join us and Junior Klein and the Recliners Saturday, October 5th at the Bolger Center for Animal House. It's the third annual McPaw Party, with all proceeds benefiting lost, injured, and abandoned animals helped by the Montgomery County Animal Services and Adoption Center. It's going to be a blast, an upscale 60s-style frat party with the rock and blues and soul music of Junior Klein and the Recliners, an over-the-top barbecue and raw bar, an open bar, one-of-a-kind auction items, and more. Forget fancy-schmancy black tie. Dress like you did in college, wear your frat memorabilia, and bring your canine party animals on a short leash, please. For tickets and info, visit mcpaw.org, that's mcpaw.org, and click on the Eventbrite link. Special thanks to McPaw's cornerstone sponsors, Excel Services Corporation, WTOP, Bethesda Magazine, EMP 180, and the Ritz-Carlton Tyson's Corner.